revolution. Well, you know.
Welcome to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening and somewhat excited about Seward Community Co-op's upcoming CSA Fair. The CSA Fair is on Saturday, April 27th, and in studio to talk about this event and the importance of community-supported agriculture and owning our food system is Natalia Mendez. She's the Director of Marketing and Communication for Seward Community Cooperative, Jacob Daniels with Jacob Daniels Farm, and Amber Kirstein with farmertofarmer.org. So welcome to Food Freedom Radio.
Thank you so much for
having us.
Yay. So let's just go around and just say a little bit about ourselves and our background and what brings us to this.
Oh, gosh. So I've been at Seward Co-op for about 4 years now, and I'm in marketing and communications, and I really enjoy kind of spreading the good word and being a cheerleader for, local food systems and sustainable eating and just keeping our communities nice and strong.
Cool. Amber?
I've been with Farmer to Farmer for 3 years, and we are focused on a couple different projects, including educational scholarships for farming families and weavers' families' kids, and also direct trade coffee, so we can bypass some of the corruption and yucky stuff that happens when we're moving between the global north and global south.
And you're a person who was selling yak meat during the COVID. So we're gonna talk more about that. So that was quite interesting. And Jacob?
This would be my third year as a farmer. And started working with a community farm. We are fully certified organic. And it makes a huge difference when you taste the organic food compared to the ones that I used to buy on the store. I was, surprised, and that actually was my main motivation to keep going.
Okay, so let's start. Just talk about the event. What's going on Saturday, April 27th?
Yeah, so this is our 23rd annual community-supported agricultural fair, and I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with CSAs, but for those who are not familiar, it's a way for us to be kind of like the middle people to get some of these smaller local farms to community members. So although some of these farms may not be able to access customers on kind of a more larger commercial or like grocery store scale, we like helping people connect the dots so that they can have access to fresh and super duper seasonal fruits and vegetables, herbs. We also have some farmers they're not all farmers. Some of them are bakers and butchers, and we have connections with so many wonderful community producers that, there's cocktails and honey and just cheeses. So getting, again, small, local, sustainable farmers in touch with our community is kind of what it's all about. And that's 11 to 2 in the Seward Co-op Creamery parking lot. We also are going to have quite a bit of programming for young people. So if you have little cooperators or young people that you want to get interested in their food and farming, it's going to be a really great event for that.
One of the things I've always loved about the CSA Fair is, in our dominant economic models, you're like promoting your competitors.
people, we've had that come up over the years, or we've had people suggest that over the years, but we don't consider it that. I think about our food system, we're community co-op, we're community-owned grocery store, and it's so important for us to strengthen the community and our local food systems. And even though when you look at it really deeply, there are competition, but for us, the greater good is that keeping our communities strong, and that means supporting the farmers that keep us all fed. And we've had farmers that started at the CSA fair that were able to scale up because they had, the people wanted their stuff that allowed them to eventually sell in our stores. So it's about strengthening our community, sometimes over kind of our own profit at some points,
I love it because and there's been some wonderful stories that way, because it is about economics is more than just these dollars. It's like how we live as people with each other.
It's so true. And, it's just a really beautiful event to see. I spoke with someone at a local newspaper who said he was trying to decide which CSA he was gonna pick, and his brother said, "Well, have you been to Seward Co-op's speed dating for CSA event?" And I was like, "Wow, that's actually a really good way to explain it, because I don't think people quite know, but it's, you know, this year we have, I think, over 30 farmers that are set up at tables, and it is kind of like speed dating. You, like, go to one table, to the next table, you meet the farmers, you learn about their products, you get to chat with them in person, face-to-face. And then along with that, even if you're not able to attend in person, we have a really wonderful guide online that has a couple tabs that shows you who's going to be there in person, who is not going to be there, but you can still buy a CSA share from them and learn a lot about them. So again, even though some people might see it as competition, we just want people to have access to really delicious, nutritious local food. And it's just kind of, again, providing access and a pathway towards lots of folks. And especially when it comes to access, a lot of these folks, you can adjust your shares. So you can do like a half share, or decide how often you want it delivered to you. Or if there's financial need, there are some folks that will do financially, you know, like a discounted or financial need priced CSA box. So again, it's all about access, sustainability, keeping it local. And, you know, with like climate change and the weird winter we have, I feel like Minnesota's become such a refuge state for trans rights. I feel like we're already becoming kind of like a climate crisis refuge state as well. Like, you think about the coasts are heating up, droughts in a lot of different places. Like, we have fertile soil. This season has been weird. I wonder how it's going to impact farmers. I've been thinking about that a lot with our lack of snow. But we are a place that we must sustain our local farmers, because they sustain us. And, you know, we want people to support them as well.
No farmers, no food. And the other thing you have is also mutual aid. So if somebody is in a position where they've been very fortunate, they can buy a CSA for a community member. So they're supporting several things at the same time. They're helping someone get food, but they're also helping with this deeper issue of no farmers, no food. So how do we support the farmers in an ecosystem that works for water and soil and each other?
We all need each other. Yep.
Cool. Okay, Amber, tell us about Farmer to Farmer.
Well, Farmer to Farmer, the coffee project, sources directly from family farms in Honduras and Guatemala. So there are 10 farms that sent in coffee this year. And we're small. These are smaller than nano lots, definitely smaller than micro lots. And so it's people that we've had relationships with for a long time. And there's also a women's cooperative, which is the same deal in Guatemala. And so right now the trend in relationship coffee is this idea that, you know, you might see a farmer's picture or their story on packaging, which is fantastic and a really good start, but could easily be commodifying those stories, which they're not cheap stories to live. They shouldn't be cheap stories to access. And so we're really trying to do it in an authentic way and make sure that we're there for every step of the process, bringing this in. So we kind of have two paths where we roast it and sell it under our label. And so that's where people can buy subscriptions. But we also sell green beans to independent roasters to kind of facilitate that piece of community too.
So you're actually talk more about, because you visited Nicaragua recently. So tell us a little bit about that experience and what you saw there.
It was Honduras. I was in, and it was great. You know, a lot of origin trips are really popular, and you go and you take a tour of the coffee farm, and you probably pick a couple coffee beans, and it's great to get a sense of what that's like, and that is really cool and also just scraping the surface. So when we go, we're staying with friends that we consider family, and we're riding up the mountain in the back of the pickup truck for hours and hours and more hours, and staying in homes, and it's great. One of our board members, Andy, because we're a 501c3 nonprofit, there are pictures of him tacked up in the shed from 20 years ago, back when he was skinny and had more hair, and the kids were little on either side of him. And now those kids are big and excited about their piece on the coffee field. So it's really a relationship based organization. And that was awesome to see firsthand, because I see the names on the coffee bags all day long, and I send out press packets, and those are fantastic things to do as part of my job, and it became so much more real. Now when I see those names on the coffee bags, I'm like, my people.
So, Amber, we'll talk more about, and we're going to learn more about your yak farming or your yak selling yak meat, too. Jacob.
Yeah, so my story, we are farming in a community farm. So pretty much like we have 150 acres of land. But I'm not farming on 150 acres. We have roughly like 20 farmers. So the one reason I came or I started exploring CSA is because of Seaward Co-op. Because they reached out to me and they asked, do you want to start a CSA? So I'm like, oh, my God, now I have an opportunity. Because I always thought about it but never, you know, had that chance to do it. But thanks to Seaward Co-op for doing that. And I started it last year, but it's a small group. But trying to do more marketing this year, educate people about what CSA can do to a farmer and also to the people who are buying the produce and enjoying the produce. And, you know, they get to compare it with what they get in the store. And with farming in a community, you know, set, the good thing is if I can actually have access to the things that I am not growing. So I can actually go to other farmers and, you know, hey, what do you guys have for this week? Oh, can I buy that from you? You know, things like that. So, and I can also club with other farmers. Like, for example, this year I'm actually providing biweekly eggs to my CSA members because I'm, you know, working with another farmer. So, you know, it is helping a lot. Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, and we're talking all about the CSA Fair at Seaward Community Co-op, and that is on April 27th from 11 to 2, and it's at the Seaward Co-op Creamery building in the parking lot. That's 2501 East Franklin. We'll take a break. We're right back. You're listening to Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Laura Hedlund, a student of nature-led gardening, and somewhat excited about Seaward Community Co-op's upcoming CSA Fair on Saturday, April 27th. And in studio with us is Natalie Mendez, Jacob Daniel, and Amber Kirstein. And Amber, you have something called, you're active right now with Farmer to Farmer, but I've teased it a little bit. You were actually selling yak meat during COVID, which is such a fun little story. So tell us the story about selling yak meat during COVID.
That was one of my favorite business cards I ever had. I hand that out to people.
How many more? Like, I just bought one.
We actually closed I had a very little storefront that happened during COVID because a friend of mine was raising and selling yak meat. And he was just doing it on the farm, but he had this space. And all of a sudden, a lot of my farmer friends were losing their markets. So a lot of farmers' markets were closing. There was a lot of trouble getting animals to process, with the butchering system then. And so I thought, you know, we've got all the pieces. We have a storefront that we can really limit how many people are in. We can do shopping by appointment to make sure that it's accessible for anybody who, you know, was taking extra precautions at the time. They could be the only person only person besides me in the building. But yeah, so we had freezers full of yak meat, and yaks are really sustainable. They're another one of my jobs is working with water quality, and so in terms of compaction of the soil, they are grazing animals more like deer than cows in their way that they move through the land, and so they're this great option and also delicious.
I was going to ask, how does yak meat?
Never had yak meat, but I want it so bad now.
I do too.
As long as if you overcook it, it is terrible. As long as you go gentle and you back off a few minutes before you think you should, it is delicate and tender and tiny, beautiful little steaks. So
does it taste like steak?
It's sort of like The grain is more like venison, like the grain of the meat. But yeah, it does taste a lot like steak.
Okay.
Like butter steak.
Oof. Wow. Is it a kind of a leaner meat too?
It's super lean, yeah. Which is why you gotta be careful of that cooking time because it dries out so fast. So.
So it was COVID time, and we can remember that there was, there's so much tragedy around that, but also they were like killing pigs because they didn't have the capacity to butcher them. And so much of the meat in our country comes from like four companies control 80% of the market. And I've also heard that humans are actually eating less, we're eating a less diverse diet than we did not that long ago. So the idea of eating yak meat is really fascinating. And the idea of just being creative and helping the farmers and doing something like that, it's just a beautiful story.
Thanks. Yeah, it ended up being a really special time. I've connected with a lot of farmers, and my kids were home from school then, so I got to make a living, which I appreciate, while the kids were home, and it worked out great. I still have 2 packets of yak meat left in my freezer, saving them for special occasions.
I'm going to have to follow up with you after this to find out where your local yak resources are, because I got to try a yak steak now.
Yeah, I want a yak steak. Yak. Talking yak.
Yeah.
And Jacob, you have an interesting story. You're a farmer, but you're also an engineer. So that's not your typical. I mean, so tell us about your engineering background and why you wanted to grow food.
So I'm a mechanical engineer, and I do an 8-to-5 job in front of a computer. And, you know, the windows in Minnesota, it's like I come to the office, it's dark. I leave the office, it's dark. And the summer, you know, I get to see the sun, but doesn't get time to spend with the sun. You know, that's how I put it. So that's when I wanted to do something outdoor. And that's when I found this program, and then I liked it. And also, I work in the HVAC. The heating, ventilating, and air conditioning equipments. And we have a lot of indoor farms that's coming up, like greenhouses where they actually produce leafy greens, strawberries. So we actually make units for them too. So, you know, a guy who is designing those things should also have hands-on experience growing these things. And, you know, it's beautiful. Like, our farm is at Moraine on St. Croix, and the landscape is so gorgeous. And especially now, like, in May, you can see all those small yellow flowers, like, all over. Oh, boy, it's amazing. And if it is not too hot outside, you know, it's actually so refreshing for your eyes. Trust me.
It's beautiful. And that's Big River Farms, which is a nonprofit in town that you were working with.
Correct? Yes, yes.
So... you know, I love that story, too, from so many perspectives, because being with nature and growing our own food is also part of our own personal well-being. It's not just transactional. It's relational.
Yes. It's always means I go to farmers markets, and when I get the opportunity to talk with farmers who are tasting my food, getting their feedbacks, and I actually record those feedbacks and try to improve. Like, some people don't like food packaged in plastic. You know, they like recycled materials, like small things like this, from the taste of the food, you know. And means they ask you a lot of questions about how to cook this thing. You know, some people, they see this vegetable, they want to try it, but they don't know how to use it. So maybe create a small card, like on a piece of paper with some menus. So, you know, it's for new farmers, because I see a lot of young families coming to the farmers market, plus they are interested in CSA, but they are not fully aware of how to use certain products. So it's nice to give them maybe a small menu card. Hey, try this, or maybe send them to a YouTube video. Hey, check this menu out. Maybe you can give it a try. If you like it, you know, tell your friends and family, you can come and buy it later.
In the next segment, we're going to do a deep dive on tips on how to do a CSA, because it can be kind of, all of a sudden you're getting a big box of vegetables. What do you do? So we'll do that more in the next segment. But do you want to hop in here and just talk a little bit more about the importance of community and our coming together in a relational economical system, the potential of that?
Well, again, kind of like I was saying before, I just feel like we need to make sure that these farmers are around. Like you said, no farmers or no food. And even if it is quote unquote competition, again, like we're here to build community as the kind of like bottom line, greatest piece, super driven by our ends in that way. And for us, it's more about, again, sustaining community, building community, and then creating opportunities for, you know, education and learning. And that's why I really like what you're doing by, you know, giving people information about how to cook the food or how to deal with it. I was involved with I'm Seward Co-op related, but bouncing to something else. Like, there's this Edible Boulevards program here in the Twin Cities that I really love that I was a part of that works with these, like, green zones, so lower income zones in the Twin Cities. And they're encouraging people to garden on smaller plots of land, like in the boulevards. And the thing is, what my work with them was involved with teaching people how to cook with those items, because if you're a first-time gardener and you're working with hardy plants that you're not going to be able to kill, if you're not used to cooking with fresh food, or if you're in like a, you know, food apartheid zone, like, and you're, you have your own food and you're not super used to fresh food, and you're like, what do I do with this? So my work was teaching people how to do
this. We're going to take another break, but I love that phrase, food apartheid zone. That's a beautiful phrase. So you're listening to Food Freedom Radio. We're talking about the Seward Community Co-op, the CSA Fair, which is on Saturday, April 27th from 11 to 2 at the Seward Co-op Creamery Building parking lot, 2601 East Franklin Avenue. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Hedlund, and today we're talking about Seward Co-op's 2024 CSA Fair on Saturday, April 27th. And before we went on break, we're talking a little bit about the Edible Boulevards that Michelle Shaw does. So you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I love Seward Co-op. I've been a member for, I feel like, over 11 years. So starting to work there in 2021 was a really kind of like a dream come true for me. And because of all of the connections I have in the community, I was able to connect with Michelle Shaw and teach some classes for her Edible Boulevards program, which, again, is it's in these two green zones, so in North and South Minneapolis, where it's historically lower income and food access has been limited, which is why I use the phrase food apartheid versus food desert. Deserts are a naturally occurring thing. Apartheids are things that are sometimes, you know, placed.
I love that. And also, deserts can be very flourishing, vital area. So that idea of, you know, like the food desert's bad instead of food apartheid, which talks about the systematic and the stupid access, not giving kids access to fruits and vegetables is really stupid.
It's so wild. So I know, shout out to Michelle. I love the work that she's doing. Everything, all the recipes that we have to put together are vegan and they're super, you know, plant-based things. And again, we were encouraging people, giving them grants so that they can grow gardens in their boulevards. But again, if you haven't had access to fresh fruits and vegetables or food for some period of time, or you're used to a different quality, or if you're just growing something you've never grown before, like you're like, how do you cook with this? How do I know when it's ready? You know, people ask questions, and it's really nice because we set up a table in a community garden and we cook these classes. And again, the only reason I'm doing this is because Seward Co-op is connected with Edible Boulevards, and it's just, again, constantly, like, there's so many little ways. I'm in the beginning of my fourth year with Seward Co-op, but, like, I'm still learning all of the really nice little ways that, like, our roots are so deep in the community and kind of far-reaching and create opportunities to grow that community that we have.
And I'm going to do a push for the movie Co-op Wars, which I think is still available publicly, because it's actually a beautiful story about how Seward Co-op got started. Do you want to briefly share it?
You know, okay. So I moved from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Shout out to River West Co-op. That was my first co-op many, many years ago. And they got me really excited about it. And then I moved here and learned about the Co-op Wars in the 1970s. There was this kind of you know, war between like food purity and food access. And Minnesota was like a hotbed, specifically the Twin Cities was this hotbed of cooperative kind of like infighting about, are we going for like organic and, you know, sustainable and everything? And, you know, it's hard because we want all of it. And the food access piece, people were like, we just want to feed people. And with like, even if it's, you know, cost effective, maybe not the highest quality. And, you know, I feel like right now at the co-op, we're working to find the balance between that high quality. And, you know, we've actually had to we have these brand standards that we've kind of had to loosen up a little bit because when we think about the economics and the inflation and because we work so hard to pay our staff well, to pay our farmers well, to make sure that we have things that are culturally significant. So we have a pretty broad range of products, you know, from the super diverse clientele that we have, you know, and we have 25,000 owners now at this point from many different backgrounds. And that's not even including the people that aren't owners that shop with us. And just by the way, for anybody listening, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the folks that listen to the show are familiar with food co-ops, but I want them all to understand that it's not like a Sam's Club or anything where you have to like buy in to be a part of it. You know, we have everyone welcome on the outside of our stores, and we do really mean that. You can come and shop with us if you're not an owner, but we really like you to be because it's not just like you're like you get a vote in our board of directors election. Your voice is, you know, goes a little farther with us, and it's also just like a lifetime membership that there's benefits to that. I'm not going to pitch that as much, but it's also just like if you're here to sustain the local community, a lot of that, even if you just get it just to shop here, knowing that people are getting paid well, farmers are getting paid well, and that you're sustaining the local economy, that you're buying from local farmers and producers, and even if they're not local, we work so hard to partner with small-scale, sustainable, organic, and inclusive producers on a regular basis because it is Minnesota. You can't always grow tomatoes in the summer and in the winter unless you have like a hydroponic setup, which we do have partners that we work with, so we do have that too.
Cool, cool. So let's jump to how your CSA works, Jacob Daniels. How does that happen? How does it work?
So my CSA is like one chair, and I named it All We Grow. So and I deliver it to Seabird Co-op once every week. This last year it was every Sunday, and this year it's every Friday. And then all my members can come to Seabird Co-op, pick that up. It's more convenient because then they get to shop. They get to see what's in my box, and if they want something else, they can shop it because the shop is right there. So that's the model. So every week, they can expect anywhere from 8 to 12 items, depending on the season. So early in the season, more leafy greens, and middle season, like more fruits and towards the end, watermelons, tomatoes, cucumbers. And I grow these huge 25-pound watermelons, which are like yellow color. Ooh. And they are the sweetest. And trust me, I've got great reviews from people who tried it. But, you know, a family of four, it might take them some time to finish it.
I want to get one of those watermelons.
No kidding.
Watermelons, 25-pound yellow watermelons and yak meat. That's going to be on the grocery shopping list. So.
Get together after this and split one of the big watermelons so that we can eat it all.
So give us some tips on how to use this. So you get a big box of vegetables. You sign up in advance. Well, let's talk a little bit. How does the money part work?
So I have two options. One is people can pay upfront for the whole CSA, which runs for 13 weeks, or they get to do a 3-installment, so, you know, 3 times. I'm also planning to start like a trial version where they get to trial the box for 1 month, which is, you know, 4 boxes. If they like it, they can, you know, join for more, or else, you know, give me feedback. What can I improve? What do you want to see? You know, and so I can, you know, do a better job at providing what they really need. So it's basically catering to your customer's request, to their taste, as much as I can.
And so on the Seward Co-op website right now, there's all these different CSAs. So and I like this name, CSA Speed Dating. So you can go to the event on Saturday, April 27th from 11 to 2. But you can also go on the website and just look at all the options for CSAs.
Sure. And it kind of depends on how you like to, you know, get your information. If you're like a if you're a reader, the guide that we have online is going to give you all the information. If you're a little more not much of a people person and you want to just do your research and get your CSA, that's the spot for you. I'm a pretty, you know, I like to meet people and chat with them. So for me, I'm going to go in person and talk with farmers. And again, like, it is so much better to like chat with someone in person, because I'm hearing Jacob talking about this trial box, and I'm not sure if you're talking about it now, but that's ideal for me. I'm one person who lives by myself, and that's the hard thing sometimes. Like, I love CSAs. That's why I love the co-op, because I can get my CSA quality food from local farmers throughout the season as much as I need. But I think about the ability to try it for a month is so smart, because sometimes I think people – I mean, that was when I was buying CSAs. That's what kept me from doing it for a while. So I was like, I'm not sure what's going to be in there and if I'm going to like it and that kind of deal. So –
and I think one of my big tips for when I got the CSA box is like, okay, this is a time commitment. I mean, it does take more time. You get it's worth it. So just play some really good music when you're doing your food. It just changes the whole thing, right? But to do that, plan on, I'm getting my box, I'm going to wash it, I'm going to prep it, and anything I don't want, I'm going to give it away.
Yeah, we've had people talk about that at the co-op, and we try to encourage people sometimes. We're like, yeah, if there's something in your CSA box that you're not going to eat, we have a donation area where you can put, you know, if there's like hearty squashes or cucumbers or something in there. We also work with a couple different local businesses. Second Harvest Heartland is one of them, that they take food and they bring those to shelters or to kitchens that are cooking for people that are lower income or need food. And we also encourage people to do that when we have like our BOGO deals. We're like, if it's canned food, buy one, get one. If you're like, this is more than I need, but I get one anyway, so you can donate that right away as well. But yeah, sometimes it's a lot of food. But
and sometimes one of my big tips, and in the long term, it saves time, is I'll make a triple batch of something,
yep,
but then
it.
Put like 2/3 of it away, and then I'll just use 1/3 of my vegetables for the meal I'm going to make that night, and then I can just take out some of it and save time for the next time I'm cooking. What kind of tips do you have for
– It's funny you say that. Okay, so I'm really big on this is where I get stuck. So it's like, are we combating food waste? Are we combating single-use plastic waste? And like, this is like always where I'm weighing it out, because I'm a big fan of my food saver, which I'll be honest, does require some plastic baggies, and my freezer. So I do a lot of freezing, drying, or I'll make stuff into soups and just put those, like, if it's something that's already prepped and like liquid, I'm going to throw that in a glass jar with enough headroom so that it's not going to, you know, get freezer, it's not going to burst or have freezer problems. So freezing, drying, those are kind of my main ones. Mm-hmm. You know, lots of herbs I like to put in oil, especially if it's herbs that I use a lot. So I'll freeze those in oil and then throw those in like a pasta sauce or something. And root vegetables, specifically like ginger and garlic, I process a lot of those, put those into these. I have like reusable silicone freezer bags. You like make a sheet of it, and then you kind of, once they're semi-soft, like throw it in the freezer for like a half hour and then take like a butter knife to portion it and like run like a line in it so that I can just crack off like a cube of ginger or a cube of garlic. And that's, it's not, it doesn't take long for a thin like tablespoon of ginger or garlic to like go in the pan. But those are, I mean, that's the stuff that I think of that I kind of do year-round. I do a lot of pickling. I love preserving lemons, which we don't grow here, but, you know, preserving Meyer lemons when it's Meyer lemon season. I want that year-round. Pickling jalapenos, pickling red onions. Yeah, those are my go-tos. What about y'all? I mean, I'm sure y'all are cooking a lot. What do you do for your...
Yeah, I am soup. I could have soup every lamp soup. Every my kids would eat that every day of the week if I let them. But it is a nice, you know, we do Sunday afternoon quite a bit. Just anything that's left in the fridge, clean it out, toss it in soup. Works really, really well.
It's wet. It's food.
It's food.
I
grew up in a larger family. There wasn't food waste in our house, but because that was it. My mom did that. It's like, what's here? Okay, we'll cook with what's there.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. How about, Jacob, do you have tips on?
I do, like for tomatoes, I try to make sauces with them. So we have homemade sauce. Herbs, try to dry them and then grind them. So I have it you know, for a larger shelf of life. Cucumbers, make cucumber water with some lemon in it, and then drink it every week. You'll be surprised how fast the cucumbers get over.
Okay, say that once again, because that was interesting.
So a jar of water
with
some sliced cucumbers in it,
mm-hmm.
and leave it for a day, and next day your water tastes like cucumber.
Oh, yes, the basic cucumber water. That sounds great.
Yeah, and my wife, she also uses cucumber for facial stuffs, you know, keeping the eye cool and things like that. So you can...
Keeping it cool. We're going to take a break. We're talking about the Siri Co-op 2024 CSA Fair, which is Saturday, April 27th from 11 to 2. And that's at the Seward Co-op Creamery Building, 2601 East Franklin. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Food Freedom Radio. I'm Laura Headline, and we're talking all about the Seward coming up CSA Fair on Saturday, April 27th from 11 to 2. And you want to talk a little bit about the microgreens program.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
So the microgreens program is something that we launched last year, and we feel like growing strong community starts small. So this is a program designed for kiddos. You know, we're seeing a lot of our people coming into our stores throughout the years. There's always been families, and we're realizing the people that started to become co-op owners with us in the 70s are not with their families anymore, but we have a new generation of folks, and we want to know that we're here for them. We're here for their kiddos, and we have a quarterly publication that we do, and we've included kids' events and that kind of stuff in the last year, and we're kind of focusing big time on microgreens this year, and it's, again, just engaging kids with food, doing some, like, light education about local food systems and the importance of food and where it comes from, and just having them be a little knowledgeable from an early age. Kids are smart, smarter than I think we give them credit for sometimes, and if we present things to them in a way that they can understand, it can get them really excited, and we're trying to do that with this program. So lots of microgreen stuff that this year's CSA Fair, so Midwest Food Connection will be there to make, like, little seed balls with them so they can take those home and plant those. We'll have farm-themed face painting with a local face painter, Madeline Asher. We also like to do kind of like I Spy bingo so they can win little prizes. Minnesota Grown will be there as well. They're actually one of our sponsors for this year, which is great. We've never had a sponsor before, but they were really excited about the CSA Fair, and we're like, yeah, state of Minnesota, local farmers, like, we want you to know about us and for us to know about you. So they're going to be temporary tattoos with Minnesota Grown and more stuff like that. So very kids-focused this year, but it's just always a really, really fun time.
And do you want people to RSVP if they can?
Yes, if you can. I mean, everybody's welcome. Please stop by if you have a free day and if you didn't RSVP, no big deal. We usually have coffee and cookies, so it helps us to know how many people are coming, so we have enough cookies for you. We always have vegan and gluten-free options, of course. And you can go to seward.coop/events. And that will allow you to just click a quick button, RSVP on Eventbrite. It's very easy.
And again, there's 30 different farms, so you can kind of just go talk to people about what type of CSAs they offer. And if people aren't able to go to the event, they can go to your website and actually click on them and learn that way.
Correct.
As well.
Yeah, and also board of directors will be there. We've got members from that. So if you want to talk with them about cooperative economics, about running for the board later this summer, about our Roundup seed folks, if you want to do that, a couple of the board of director members will be there as well.
Cool. And tell us a little bit more again about Farmer to Farmer, Amber.
Yeah. So with CSA fairs, CSAs in general, a lot of the – we all get the reward. You know, we get these beautiful tomatoes and ginormous watermelons. And so the idea is investing and sharing the risk as well as the reward with the farmers. And that's something that Farmer to Farmer makes a point of doing with the coffee farms, because we pay – a really good price for the green coffee, and we pay it in advance so that the farmers don't have to bear the burden of paying the pickers out of their pockets before the harvest money has come in, and so that, you know, they don't have to be in a place where they have to choose between taking out a predatory loan. And so we just really try to do that, to to be sharing some of the scary parts as well as celebrating the rewards together.
And to just jump in real quick and echo that, that's something we've also said in the past, is when you're buying a CSA share, you're investing in a local farmer's growing season. You're putting the capital up front so that they can be successful. And then at the end, like you said, we all benefit from it.
And that really makes a big difference when you're thinking about the best possible choices to make for the land, too, and for the community. That money doesn't just disappear. It gets reinvested somewhere. And I can't think of anybody who I would trust more to reinvest that money than the growers and farmers that are around us.
And you wrote on a recent reflection, quote, "To see a nation that has experienced so much hardship over the past century or more and still filled with so much joy is humbling and inspiring at the same time." And I was at another event, this connection between joy and but it's also building this joyful world and making it better so it doesn't have to be so hard.
Yeah, and it's got and this sort of thing gives hope too, right? That we've got a place to be connected. And so I'm really grateful to be a part of this.
That's great. And Jacob Daniels?
While talking with different people, they actually want to contribute and help a farmer. So I tell people like CSA, you're becoming a partner with us. So it's like you buying a Microsoft share. You buy it for $300. You buy a share, and now you're going to enjoy it. Like for the next season, you're going to be a part of this community. You're going to help the farmer also help in everything that he's trying to do. That is a sustainable farming practice and putting that money back into the ground. So, you know, that is all about, you know, developing the community together. So come meet us at the fair on April 27th and, you know, let's chat.
Let's chat. Last 2 minutes, I know, and you also have this wonderful mutual aids because sometimes we have some listeners that aren't even in the Minnesota area. So, but you can just sign up for a CSA for somebody else too as a gift and gift that. So that's a wonderful thing. So in this last minute, let's just do a round table and tell us your website and anything else you'd like to say.
My website is jacobdanielfarms/squire.site.org. it's a big one, but, you know, it's free, so it's not costing me anything. So, you know, as a farmer, I need to look at the monetary funds too. But you can check me out there. You can see all the options that we provide for our CSA members and a story about me and my wife and our farming practices.
Can we follow you on social media at all? Are you on Instagram or Facebook or anything?
As soon as I create one, I will share it.
just checking. I wanted, as a marketing person, I'm like, let's make sure we plug those socials, baby.
Sure. I'm still collecting videos and photos of the farm.
Great.
Amber?
I'm Amber Kirsting, and I'm with Farmer to Farmer, our coffee program, which is at farmertofarmer.org. And we are also on Facebook and Instagram.
And I'm Natalia Mendez from Seward Co-op, and you can find us at seward.coop. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. And, yeah, we're happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. I love this conversation. I love the hope and the optimism. I mean, I like this word glimmer because we're hearing so much about triggers. It's like, no, we need more glimmers. We need to build up, but we can have a better world, and we can sustain this place, and we can create it better for our generation, for our children, and experience that as well. So I thank you, and I thank you for listening,
you.
And have a wonderful week.